I hereby call the Desert Community Energy meeting of Monday, June 16, 2025 to order. Could we roll call, please?
City of Palm Desert.
Present.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
Chair of the floor.
Thank you. And do we have any agenda modifications? No?
None.
No. Okay. We'll now go into public comments on agenda items. The first of two opportunities to address the board. Any person wishing to address the Desert Community Energy Board on items appearing on this agenda may do so at this time. Please limit comment to 3 minutes. At the discretion of the chair, additional public comment time and/or opportunities during the meeting may be granted. Do we have any public comment?
Chair, did not receive any emails, comments, and I checked with the public in there.
Okay. Do we have any board member or executive director comments?
Just really quickly, at the last meeting, we had discussed the community benefit grant that was part of the new contract with Calpine. Just as a reminder to the public, these are grants that will be a portion of the contract value Calpine will use to provide funding to qualified community-based organizations to support programs that respond to community needs. So I've reached out to Calpine. There's some, and we will be starting to have conversations with them, and we can bring back this back as an agenda item in the fall to talk a little bit more about things like the objectives, the funded categories, timeline, et cetera. Just wanted to
Okay.
share that.
Great. Thank you very much. Next to the consent calendar, do we have any? We have no modifications within the poll?
Nope.
Okay. Do we have a motion for approval?
Move approval.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We now go on to the DCE fiscal year 2025-2026 budget.
We're doing it.
7A.
It's that time of year again. Nice to see you both. All right, so should we jump into some numbers here?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right, and actually we have the three things I was hoping to cover with you today. And first we're going to go on to talk about some inputs into the budget. We'll look at the numbers, and then we're going to talk about some fun stuff like ratios and cash reserves. Okay. We'll just move on then. So was it last month whenever we had our last meeting? And we talked about Palm Springs being the only jurisdiction that DC is going to be serving load to next fiscal year. And the fiscal year runs starting July 1st through June 30th. And one of the major inputs in the budget, obviously, is the customer count. So the budget assumes approximately 33,000 customers that DC serves its load to. And remember, load is demand, more or less, for that electricity product. And there we're talking about the load. I already mentioned that. And one of the big factors in the load is obviously the temperature and what we're going to expect. So it's been a hot June. We can expect more load this month than maybe we saw last June. And it also, you know, complicates by how many customers we have, which there's numbers are always changing. In meters, we talk about customers, but we actually have closer to almost 40,000, between 39 and 40,000 meters out there, because the city of Palm Springs has hundreds of meters, but maybe only one master account there. And one thing the budget does assume, in addition to some slight increase in customer accounts for next year, is electrification and EV charging, and those things also have shown some slight increase in the load that DCE is going to anticipate next fiscal year. So I just want to show you graphically what that looks like. So we have what we budgeted for this fiscal year was about 390 gigawatt hours. And our year-end estimates actually come in less than that, is 375 gigawatt hours or so. We're estimating next year with some trends in customer accounts going up and that electrification playing into the figures closer to 383 gigawatt hours. Which I think is always interesting. You can time that times 1,000 and you get 383,000 megawatt hours that we'll serve, or 383 million kilowatt hours that we're going to serve the customers next year. So that's a pretty interesting number to look at with all the zeros there. So obviously load's a very important factor to the budget. This past year, we've come in quite a few months under the load projection. So it's something we're going to be monitoring really closely as we go into next fiscal year with some of the political dynamics and see what's going on with the trends there. Another important input into DCE's budget is its relationship with Southern California Edison as the resident IOU, or investor-owned utility, to our customers. They present, you know, part of the bill. They have the transmission and delivery charges. So they provide that part of the bill, and DCE provides the electric generation charges, kind of the windmills there represented in that simple graphic. So anytime that SCE's is changing their rates, we have to monitor it for Desert Saver. We have a program that discounts to SCE's average bundled bill, which gives the most affordable option compared to SCE's rate classes. And there's also this exit fee that you might have heard about. Basically, when the CCAs were created, the commission, the Public Utilities Commission, designated or mandated that customers who the IOU or SCE procured energy for, so imagine they built those generation plants and things, they had already built those costs out to their portfolio, and that when there's an exit to a CCA, that those customers that remain with the IOU shouldn't be unduly impacted for that energy that was already procured for all the customers. So there's like a little exit fee that plays into DCE's revenue numbers. And I'm going to get into that a little bit more here. It's actually called the power charge and difference adjustment. I have to look up what that stands for every 3 or 4 months because I forget, but it's the PCIA. We can kind of call it there. And it actually is a really complicated formula, probably hundreds of inputs, but I'm going to break it down to two basic inputs. So it's more or less that portfolio cost, what it costs to build all those generation stations and other agreements they have, minus SE's market value of their portfolio. And that's more or less this PCIA out. So this PCIA can be positive or negative. In the past few years, DCE's benefited because it's been negative. But we have seen trends where it's increasing, and that reduces the amount of revenue that DCE can collect because of the way the formulas work. So, in fact, the budget document uses May 15th, 2025, so just last month, the most recent information available that we have for this. And they're projecting it to go up like 35% or something like that. So that's, you know, not helping the situation, but it's far better than what Lisa and I have been monitoring on the PG&E territory. They're having really trouble up there with some of the PCA stuff. So we're actually going to know a final decision in December is whenever the CPUC finalizes what the PCIA is going to be. And that's through the ERA, the Energy Rates Recovery Account that SCE files. So it's still an unknown right now, but it's definitely the PCA has increased. And one interesting thing, so that market value of the portfolio goes down, that means that the PCA goes up. So we're waiting until December to know more. We have built into the budget the best projections that we know. They're less favorable than last year, but we'll know more in December, and we might have to come back and relook at the budget in January or February because of that. Okay, so that's the major inputs into the budget. And if we look at some of these numbers here, we're going to look at the revenues. So you can see relatively stable revenues from what we budgeted last year, and then we amended it in March to be about a $69 or $70 million in revenue. Our year-end estimates coming in at about $68.5 million, and then next year we're budgeting $67.1 million in revenue. The slight decrease there is mostly because this year we were able to sell off some renewable energy certificates out of DC's portfolio that we get from those wind turbines here in the city to kind of cash in and help our position this year, because it has been a little bit of a tighter year than the past couple of years for DC. So expenses relatively kind of follow the same track, about $63 million. We are noticing that the forward energy curve is going down. So there is some relief on cost pressures. But I'm sure you've seen the recent events out of Iran and things like that that we have to keep monitoring, because Natural gas prices and other commodities play into the forward energy curve as well. All that means is that we're going to look at collecting in net margin that we can save away for reserves about $4.1 million at the end of next year, which would be June 30th, 2026. So we'll talk about that 4.1 and how we got there in a little bit. But looking at this a little differently, we see that we have Pac-Man up here. We like to think about it. So DCE's total revenue, we just saw $67.1 million. 59 of that, or about 88%, is going to the physical power supply cost, which is obviously the largest expenditure or expense that the agency is going to incur. And then about 6% is made up of other costs like our portfolio manager and our customer account representatives and my staff time, which is like not even a blip on this, but all those kind of support programs are really small compared to obviously what the power supply costs. And then filling in the rest of that is that 4.1 million that we just talked about. And we're going to keep talking about how we got to that. I did want to point out that that power supply cost is really driven by our procurement of that carbon-free product. DCE has some really ambitious goals along with the city, and those play into it, the carbon-free energy that we buy. So I just wanted to point out that that we are always monitoring those costs as well. And Lisa, how many... greenhouse, there wasn't like 80,000 tons of greenhouse gas emissions that were reduced annually because of DCE's efforts here with the carbon-free energy program. I think that represents around 430 rail cars worth of coal burn annually. So next time you see a rail car go by, you can count 430 of those cars and think about that's how much DCE saves.
78,000.
78,000, there you go, metric tons per year of greenhouse gas emissions. So largely due to our carbon-free product that we offer, and that plays into the cost. Last month I was here, we talked about we're setting aside $500,000 for customer programs. Now it's my job to put that money in the budget, and it's really the board's job to tell us what to do with it. So we have another opportunity in the next fiscal year to, we'll have the opportunity to discuss where exactly and how we want to apply. I know LP from the city has been working really hard on the REACH codes. I don't know what the state says about those, if that's going to be where it goes or...
No problems.
No problem. All right. Well, the board's going to tell us where to put that money, which is $500,000. Okay, if we look at some ratios and reserves.
Make it look like a gift to LP.
It's your gift to give.
Yeah.
So S&P Global Ratings, you've heard me come up here and talk a lot the past 6 or 7 months or so about the importance of this credit rating. DCE got an investment-grade credit rating. It's really helped with the negotiations. Lisa is going to have an item in a little bit about long-term power purchases, and those conversations and negotiations go a lot easier because of that credit rating that we have. It, you know, there's all kinds of credit analysis that goes in for the seller side or the buyer in those deals. So it's super important for those items. And they've also really helped guide where we need to be. And they've kept asking or have indicated, I guess is a better way to say, that we need to have this 2.0 or higher times of a fixed charge coverage ratio, which I'm going to get into the mathematics of that in a little bit. But kind of a reminder, that was one of their big things they've been helping us to better track. So before I jump into the formula, I just want to remind everyone power purchase agreement is what PPA stands for, and it's represented by these windmills, those long-term energy agreements that DC enters into to help hedge cost uncertainty risk in the future. So DC's revenue requirement and really how we get to the bottom line in the budget is following that fixed charge coverage ratio that S&P has indicated they want to see above 2.0 for the next few years, at least. So if you take your net margin plus 50% of those PPA costs divided by 50% of the PPA cost, pretty simple formula, right? You get the fixed charge coverage ratio. Now, let's just put the numbers to it. We keep talking about that $4.1 million. It's really the only variable in this formula that the budget can be adjusted to handle, right? Like, it's the only lever that our staff could pull because the PPA costs are fixed when we sign those agreements. So dividing those two over those 50% of PPA costs gets to a 2.1 fixed charge coverage, and that's how we got the 4.1 more or less. The other metric that S&P's honed in on looking at with us is building reserves and liquidity. And this chart's in your budget book and on page 11.
Yep, 11.
Okay, so we're really looking at fiscal year 25, 26, because those out years are a lot harder to predict. And if we lay over our current reserve policy of that, our basic reserves call for 50% of a year's worth of operating expenses. So if you think about a year, it's about 360 days. You divide that by two, or 50% times that is 180 days. So you can see that DC is reaching that at the towards the end of this fiscal year, around May or so, it looks like on the chart there, which is really great. Actually, that was a target that was set out for DC to achieve by its 6th year of operations, which right. This budget represents. So we're really right on target to meet that. And it's about $31.5 million will get us there based on our current budget expense numbers, and that's at 180 days. Again, the top end of that is 270 days, which is about 75% of a year's worth of expenses. So we also amended the reserves policy, I think, in December, and that allowed for these special reserves that we can start building buckets for maybe some rate stabilization type items, or we have some other customer programs we want to start building funds for and things like that. So we've simply laid it out here like one on top of the other, but practically we're still, Lisa and I especially have been talking the past few weeks as we built out the budget, well, how's this really going to work in reality? And I think the answer is we're going to find out this year when we get towards that May timeline. When we're meeting our basic reserves, we figure, well, we need to hit our basic reserve, and then we can figure out how we're going to start siphoning with your approval and through your recommendations where those the special reserves should go to. But that gives us the longevity and the latitude to kind of build that out, whereas our previous policy didn't have that. So more to come. We'll bring agenda items, you know, in the probably spring next year once we get closer to having something to work with. And that was what I wanted to present to you. I know there's a lot of information in the packet. You probably had some questions that I can help answer at this time before perhaps we adopt the resolution to adopt the budget.
Okay, any questions?
A couple. Thanks, Claude, for that presentation. I'm trying to organize my thoughts. On first off, thank you for making the adjustments to the policy and also to reference the implementation plan in your presentation. I appreciate that. Following my questions to you, I guess so. My major question is: when we were presented budget in 24-25 originally, we were looking at $77 million, and then we made the adjustment mid-year. The volatility is always what is, you know, the crystal ball type of thing. And in planning for future years, is that how comfortable are you with the projections that you're showing, given how the past had a little more volatility?
Right. For next fiscal year, we're fairly comfortable, or as comfortable as we can be, because we have the most latest, I won't say greatest information from SCE, because it can change quite a bit in that December timeframe. And that's kind of why I had that photo up there. But as far as we know, this is the best information that we have to go with. I think for me, one of the big questions is the load. It's we're really trying to track the trend on what's going on with the customers. And they're not necessarily, we're not seeing huge opt-outs or opt-downs in that manner. But we know there's a lot of political events on there. Isn't there a whole campaign from the city of Palm Springs about We Love Canada and things like that? So you know, that's the, those are the type of inputs that make me a little less concerned, less confident in the numbers. But as far as we could do, we took all the factual data, and that's what's in the budget.
Okay.
So it's a noise that we kind of have to sort through in general.
That was the main question that I wanted to ask on that part.
Did I answer your question?
You did. I realize, of course, when you do a budget, especially when you're doing long-term budgeting, it's really hard to, you know, prepare for those sorts of things. But given such a large jump in 1 year, I just thought, is there some way to, is that built into your
like the decrease in the revenue from last year's budget? Sure, I could talk about that a little bit more. We did change the assumption that we used. Last year, we used SCE's general rate case filing. So that is a more rosy outlook of where their rates were supposed to be. So instead of having all these rate increases, which we don't necessarily want either, now that we've somewhat decoupled from that model from your decision back in March, right? So that was kind of a different metric because we were more coupled with them and we were more comfortable having that established premium. And at that point, they had this rosy outlook. They have a five-year filing with the general rate case that showed these really dramatic increases, and that's not really what played out. Luckily, right, because customers get relief in that way, so we actually changed that assumption a little bit.
Okay, and then I guess my only other question was when we're looking at your 5 year on 26-27, the wholesale tower supply had a pretty substantial decline, and I was just trying to understand if that was attributable too.
Yeah, I could speak high level to that. We saw it, and you, I can remember some of the slides that I put up, maybe was at the last meeting, and it was, we really saw some peak high prices. In fact, if you were to look at one of the power purchase agreements that DC entered into in, I think it was December, at the peak of that, we were buying for almost $100 per, I don't know the,
megawatt hour.
For megawatt hour, so I was going to guess, per megawatt hour, whereas previously we had seen contracts for, you know, $30, $40, $50 per megawatt hour. So, you know, we were comfortable with that because we needed it online soon, and that was the soonest commercial operation date we could get. But anyway, so we went from like 40, 50, like 2 or 3 years ago to now closer to 100. And what Lisa's presented to today, we have another agreement coming up, and those prices are falling. So there was really unexpected cost jump up. And part of that whole PCIA conversation earlier, and if you remember the market value of the portfolio, I'll say when that goes down, PCIA goes up. Well, that we are getting indications going down. We have products with SCE outside of the PCIA that we buy on a variable, we get variably allocated from them, from SCE. So those prices are indicated to go down, whereas they went up like by 100-something% last year. So now how's the effect on that? Because it might, I mean, to answer your question, like that's how we know from the error filing. But there's just a caveat too, is like, so those prices might drop, but then that also indirectly affects the PCIA. So we have strong indication prices are, I don't want to say flat.
Normalizing. Okay. I think my only other question was just a technicality. The DCE doesn't have to file a GAN limit resolution.
What's that?
Does DCE have to file a GAN? GAN.
I'm not sure if I know what GAN means.
It is a max appropriations limit. So I know most public entities are required to file it, and I didn't see it, and I just wanted to.
I don't know if it's something we've done before, but it's something that, I don't know if our council's on the line or we can check in with them, but it'd be something by the end of the year.
Yeah, just a question to clarify.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. Okay. It doesn't mean that we don't need to do it.
Yeah, like state tells us how much we can spend as a public entity, and there's a max that you can spend. And so based on the revenue sources, I don't think it impacts anything, but I'm assuming that you I'm assuming any public entity is required to file it.
Maybe, you know, JPAs are treated differently, so we can look into if it's a JPA is excluded from that or not.
Absolutely.
But thanks for the pointer. We'll definitely look into that.
Thank you. Okay. Yes. All right. Thank you very much. And Paul, thank you for this whole thing. You know, it's always interesting when you do a budget and you've spent months doing it, and then we spend an hour sort of reviewing it, or 2 hours, two meetings, it's not lost on us how much work goes into this. So it's really appreciated.
And thank you. It's a group effort.
Yeah, that's true. I want to just echo Vice Chair Chavez's comment. So are you feeling like this is a conservative approach to this? Because I think the volatility that we're seeing in the world is and unknown in the country is sort of extreme.
Yes. So as I certainly believe this is a fiscally conservative budget and the most that we could get it at.
Okay. Because you're also, and I just want to go back to you talking about the wholesale cost, because this one, the wholesale cost here is dollars per megawatt hours. This is at $169.93. Is that different than a different reference than what you were talking about?
Let's say that again. On which page are you on?
11. 13, sorry.
13, okay.
At the end of the red part. For this year, you go from 169 for this year.
To 158?
Yeah.
Right. Yep, and that's reflective of the price almost decreases that we are seeing out in the market.
And you're seeing a couple of years it goes out to 138.
And some of that maybe hasn't been procured yet. So the main inputs for this, we work with our financial modeling experts on, and they really have people that have PhDs in this type of data. So I know we have some of them on the line if we want to pull in and ask them any specific questions. But part of it is that some of the projected out years, we might not have procured all the modeled all the hedges that we intend to purchase and things like that.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, we're going to have quarterly updates, so we'll be able to monitor this pretty closely.
Right.
I'm not worried about the load so much as I am about the cost of everything on the unknown. So going forward.
You and I both.
Yeah. So just in terms of the cost, so the only things that really over time that are changing, we've got the money for the programs, the $500,000, and then the other one is really for staff that is changing from 5 years out, it was going from 730 to a little over a million.
Yes.
Is that because you're moving things outside from consultants into staff, or?
That's the hope that eventually, you know, that we can build out. And that's been something Tom, the executive director, is always going to push for, is that, you know, that we can take as many things in-house as we can. And when it comes to what our staff do, Lisa, did you want to add anything?
Well, one other thing I can add is where this current fiscal year is based in part on actuals. And so we've had a staff vacancy for a while, unexpected too. So I think we might have initially, you know, so yes, it's a combination of some vacancies, but this looking to move from consultants to staff during work.
Okay.
Right. So just this year, our numbers for the budget almost never come in, our actual numbers almost never come into what we budgeted. So if you look at this year's projected actuals, we're coming in almost $100,000 under what we budgeted. And that's typically what we see. And like Lisa mentioned, this year we had some turnover with some staff leaving, and then we had some new hires. So, you know, the further out years, though, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, those, you know, are more or less projections with some high level like increase throughout time, just to get the projections in there to help us get some sort of numbers. But they're only projections, and we really focus on the 25-26 budget here.
Okay. Yeah. If I share Travis, sure, we originally had budgeted more. So
right. And so we'd expect that we come in under budget again next year. In fact, I think I can confidently tell you that there was a position that we budgeted that for fulfillment starting even now, I believe, that hasn't been filled yet. So we already know it's coming.
And just thank you. And so just to clarify, so by the end of this fiscal year, you think we'll have the basic reserves, and then we'll start having, we'll meet that magic 6-year point.
That's what it's looking like.
Oh. That's good news. And I mean, in all of us, I realize there's uncertainty and stuff, but if we can actually get to that point, then I think that is really the story out there. We finally got there.
It's so true.
Yeah.
We're finally going to get there.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. I don't think I had a lot more on this. I mean, we went through most of it last time, and Vice Chair Chavez covered enough. So I think this is terrific. I think I do want to make sure we're watching it very closely in the quarterly budget update, just to see what's happening.
Absolutely. That's really important to us. That was something S&P talked about with us as well. And I think you have a staff at CBAG that really cares about this. So if my accounting staff were here, right, they can give a testament to, by the fifth of the following month after it ends, I'm like, hey, where's my VC numbers? What's going on there? Are we going to need to take something to the board? So you can only expect more of that. And honestly, the policy that you all approved back in March is really going to allow us the fluidity to adapt as needed. So, if things do change, there might have to be some tough conversations. And to meet those revenue requirements, to get those reserves, we're going to have to keep talking about that if things aren't going to pan out just like we have here.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting in this day and age to see a budget that looks this positive, considering how the rest of the world is
Yeah, I
looking.
heard y'all had a pretty long meeting last.
We did. We'll get there, but we're struggling to get to a to just balance it. But this is actually so. This is a better one for us. So no, that's terrific, and that's all my questions, and happy to move forward.
I will move approval.
Okay, I second.
Second.
I second.
I'll do it.
I all in
Bye.
favor? I okay.
All right. It's passed. Well, thank you for your time. We look forward to keeping you updated on the budget.
Thank you very much, Paul. I truly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And I just had some late-breaking news, but I did learn that CBAG, CBCC, and DCE have never filed those reports, but we will definitely look into it.
Okay.
Appreciate the input again.
Okay. The next item is the DCE Midterm Reliability Procurement Resource Adequacy and TB4 with Athos Storage LLC. We have staff report, please.
Yeah, so thank you. As Claude kind of alluded to, this is another contract for what we're calling an RA plus TB4. And by the end of this, my goal is that you will know what that means. This is, we've been working to identify projects that help us fulfill our midterm reliability or MTR procurement requirements from the CPUC. And so last year, we opened an RFP that resulted in the contract for the Phoenix Wind project that we signed in December in North Palm Springs. But while this met some of our procurement goals, in the end, that project didn't really qualify for MTR because it wasn't an existing source. So after reopening the RFP this year, we're recommending this agreement. So let me stop and define MTR. And if it's okay, I may use that acronym once or twice more just because midterm reliability is so long. So it's a requirement on all load-serving entities to ensure that there's enough resources available both for the reliability of the system and to meet our greenhouse gas emissions. So it's kind of similar. It's kind of they're adjacent, kissing cousins to resource adequacy. This means that most qualifying projects need to be renewable energy, and there's even a set aside portion needs to be long-duration storage facilities like batteries. Today's agreement is a standalone battery storage system. And DCE, we've contracted a portion of this Athos facility, and it'll be capable of outputting 43 megawatts at 4 hours of continuous discharge. And I'll come back to this 4 hours in a minute. This will be our second storage resource contract, and we'll completely at this point will completely satisfy the rest of our compliance requirement. And it will also help us satisfy the requirements for the resource adequacy, the RA and the RA plus TB4. But I think you all already had interpreted that part of it. So before I go into this a little bit more, just want to show a photo of this. And like I said, it would be built, this will be built next to an existing large solar complex. So a lot of the high voltage and other equipment is already there. It's going to connect to the Red Bluff substation. So for those of you all, if you can't see this, this is just north of the I-10 near Desert Center. So it's in Riverside County, although not here in the Coachella Valley. It's not been built yet, so I couldn't bring you a photo of it, which we normally like to do, but this is a photo kind of the general location for it. So what is an RA plus TB4 contract? The headline is that it's like an energy storage agreement, but with less risk. And an energy storage agreement is similar to the power purchases agreements that we've already signed. So why and how is this contract structured differently? So let me start by going back to what TB4 is. So it's a standard product. And you know, we use product a lot in this field to mean a lot of different things. But this one, it can be traded as a commodity, and its name describes it. It's a battery storage that charged during the bottom four lowest price hours of the day. That's the B. And then is discharged during the top four hour, highest hour prices, highest priced hours of the day. That's the T. So TB4. I guess BT. It's usually described the other way around, but I think it makes more sense to talk about when the battery's charged and discharged, but it doesn't quite get you to TB4. You know, and this matches our load really well. And like I said, this is the 4 hours that I talked about. But there's a financial risk in forecasting these top four, bottom 4 hours. You would think, well, I know when that is. It's when the sun is shining. And then in the evening, well, things like weather can impact that. Outages can impact that. And it might just be, it might vary slightly, and you might miss it slightly or by a lot. And if you do, that means you have there's a different price spread. You've bought a little bit lower and kind of sold a little bit higher as opposed to the opposite. But with this contract, we get to buy that product, that TB4 product, at a fixed price. And so we get less price volatility, which hopefully gives us increased rate certainty. And it's based on the assumption that our counterpart, the Athos storage unit, to part of SB Energy, that they'll optimize that buying and selling, charging and discharging of the battery for this entire large product and project, because there's other off-takers for this. So we just have a slice of this. So in other words, one of the key differences between an ESA, these energy storage agreements, and the RA plus TB4 is shifting the responsibility of optimizing that price or the battery dispatch to sort of maximize economic benefit, but also have that lower price risk and volatility. And it's from us to the person we're contracting with. These are increasingly common. My ability to describe this to you, though, reflects multiple tutorials from the Energy Authority to help hopefully translate this into less jargon and pure acronyms. Note that this does meet, like I said, our resource adequacy requirements as well. That price, these are priced differently. So there's two different prices in the contract. And I do also finally want to note that this project is still, even though this is not here local, it's still an example of how we can achieve our goal of, you know, supporting the community and creating jobs. The entire project is going to be built with a project labor agreement. And we were very pleased that that was highlighted in the application. And it's just estimated to create 100 construction jobs and 4 full-time jobs. And so with that, I'm open to take questions and leave you with a recommendation to adopt the resolution to authorize the company agreement.
Not any questions. I will say whenever I read these staff reports, I am reminded of RDA and all the acronyms that we had to learn then. And then I realized there's more complicated ones. But no, this was, you did a great job explaining it. We bundle projects all the time so that we can achieve economies of scale, and that is clearly what we're trying to do here. So I don't have any.
Yes, I do appreciate it. I definitely understand it much better than before. I'm not sure if I've reached the multiple things, but and there are more acronyms in these 2 pages than I've ever seen anything.
Well, I'll take that as a note to make sure that have them all written out as much a little bit better.
So, but basically, I mean, we'll just rely on Athos, who is going to take on the responsibility, and they've done this before, and we know they're
yes, and so this is a. You know, I kind of skipped over that little point here, but this is a fairly local project and they are experienced at this. And like I said, there's multiple off-takers. So it's, we feel confident. We ask them a lot of questions.
Okay. So we have no risk and we're confident that they're stable enough that we're not going to have any surprises.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you for this education. I still feel like I need a few more classes in this, but I'm good with this.
I will move for approval.
I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Aye. Okay, the next is a presentation on the summer power supply algo.
Hello, this is Jacqueline from TEA speaking. Unfortunately, my laptop decided to start not recognizing my camera around noon today, and I haven't been able to troubleshoot it yet, so I will have to come to you as a disembodied voice for this presentation. So my apologies on that. I'll start sharing my screen. Can everyone in the room see it?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So I'm here today to speak to you regarding DCE's 2025 Summer Risk Assessment. This risk assessment is something that most utilities do in advance of their peak season, and it's something that DCE staff and TEA staff collaborate on in advance of DCE's peak season, which is the summer months with particular focus on Q3, July, August, and September. So I will try to continue with Lisa's good example to not throw too many acronyms at you, but please stop me if I ever do and you'd like to have something explained, or we can always take questions at the end of the presentation as well. I believe this one is an informational only, so it's just meant to help inform the board regarding the work that staff has done to help alleviate some of the risks of the summer period, as well as the risks that nonetheless do still remain, and then some general energy industry highlights of other things outside of just the summer period that DCE staff and TA staff are considering. All right, moving on. So this is the first overview slide. The way the presentation is laid out is first we focus on sort of California as a whole, then we zoom into DCE, and then have one final slide discussing items outside of the summer concerns. So as we look to summer 2025, I know it's already feeling quite summer-like in the Palm Springs area, but the rest of the state is just starting to heat up overall. That being said, the overall summer outlook is relatively positive. We have a number of different regulatory agencies that review how the grid is looking in advance of the summer period, and the main two that focus on this are the CAISO, the California Independent System Operator, which maintains the grid and is responsible ultimately for reliability, and the CEC, the California Energy Commission, which, among other things, is responsible for forecasting load throughout the state. And therefore, you know, that forecast is a key determiner of the summer assessment. The peak load forecast for California is forecasted at 46 gigawatts or 46,994 megawatts. That summer is that peak is forecasted to occur in September, probably in the earlier end of the month, in hour ending 18, which is the end of 6 p.m., i.e. the hour between 5 and 6 p.m. And this peak is slightly less than what was forecasted for last summer. This forecast is based on an average. In the industry, we call it a 1 in 2 weather year, also known as weather normalized. It basically means just, you know, half of the summers you're going to get a peak that's higher than that, half of the summers you're going to get a peak that is lower than that, or at least that's the goal. Since last summer, the last peak that we had, the state has added a fair amount of capacity, almost over 5 gigs, 5.5 gigs of additional capacity, primarily coming from solar assets and then batteries, as well as a combination of solar and battery combined hybrid resources. And that number is based on the expectation of what should be online by the end of the month as we start to look forward to the Q3 period, where we're most likely to see the peak of the year. That gets us to a surplus of about 1.4 gigawatts above, you know, what the forecasted summer needs is, which is a better margin than we've had in previous years. That being said, all of that forecast is based on a average, you know, the average median expected summer. But we are expecting warmer than normal temperatures this year coming out of the long range weather forecast modules. And that's especially expected in inland California. So, you know, starting where you guys are, all the way north up the valley into the upper valley area of Sacramento and Chico, you know, are expecting higher temperatures. And we're also expecting higher temperatures in the Pacific Northwest, which has impacts on California, as the Pacific Northwest often sends energy into California when we need it and they need it less. So if it's hotter in the Pacific Northwest, that means less megawatts potentially coming into our area. That being said, California has had an average water year, and our reservoirs are at healthy levels, which is a stark contrast from previous years during the droughts that we had, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. The upper Pacific Northwest has been struggling a little bit more with its hydro generation, not quite drought conditions, but below normal for multiple years running, which means that it will also have less hydro generation, which is sort of a bearish indicator. And then, as always, while, like I said, this is a primarily rosy outlook, there do remain concerns regarding a west-wide heat event. That would be heat happening not just in California, but also the Pacific Northwest and in the Southwest. That sort of event is what caused or was primarily responsible for the rolling blackouts in 2020. So that's sort of the big concern. Wildfires, which potentially could cause transmission interruptions or large units going on an unexpected outage, such as Diablo Canyon Nuclear Facility, would also be concerns that could potentially jeopardize the reliability of the grid. Digging into this a little bit more, just a few slides with some graphics on them. This map is showing the expected temperature outlooks for June through August. We aren't quite yet into the time period where we would expect to have September forecasts. But you know, as you can see, the Western United States is forecasted to be above average compared to the past roughly 30 years, and with even a special emphasis on the past 10 years. So even with that sort of indicator of historical record, we're still trending above that. And as you can see, inland California is in the orange. So, you know, a high likelihood of being above your average. Oops. Not sure why it went backwards. The other thing that we pay attention to is precipitation. Obviously, in California, we're kind of done with precipitation until the winter rains start. But the Pacific Northwest and the Mountain West do sometimes get a significant amount of precipitation that can help the hydro outlook. But unfortunately, that is unlikely in the forecast here. Moving on to sort of just the hydro outlook in general, this is a map showing the Western U.S. hydro. Don't get too caught up on the colors. The main thing is that the darker the blue, the better the hydro percentage overall. And then as you go through greens to yellows to reds, the worse the hydro outlook is, and kind of the reservoir build over the past winter season. So as you can see, Northern California and down into Central California is at a reasonable level above average to average. But as you go further north and into the Upper Columbia River Basin and into the British Columbia area, which is hydrologically interconnected into California or into the Pacific Northwest, and therefore has impacts on California, the water outlook has, you know, the water year has been worse overall. And so that, like I said earlier, will lead to less hydro generation in the Pacific Northwest, which is a major source of power in the Pacific Northwest, and therefore less power available to be brought down into California as needed this summer. Digging into that California seasonal water outlook, this is a graph that's a little involved, but I rather like it. So just to orient you to what's happening here, the yellow is what is the water that is currently in the reservoirs. The darker yellow that you can see over here is the median, and this lighter yellow above it is where we are actually at this year. So you can see that we're trending quite above the positive, quite above the average for in terms of what is in the reservoirs. And we started out the year that way, and we've been able to actually build upon it a little bit. Additionally, we had a better than average snowpack year, nothing extraordinary, but better than average, and that you can be seeing in the green with the dark blue behind it being the median. So overall, we were above average with our snowpack. And now that we've gotten into June, this data is coming from late May. There's a little bit of a lag in the data. You can see that the snowpack has almost completely melted away, but the reservoirs are still quite healthy and above the median. And so that's positive as we look towards using that hydro to go through the summer period. One more chart for you guys before we dig into DCE's particular outlook. And this is a rather, again, involved chart, but a very informative one regarding the CAISO's analysis on the expected load, which is coming from the CEC, and then the resource stack, the resources that are available to meet that load throughout California. So to orient you to the chart, this furthest down dark black line is the expected load on an hourly basis on that worst day of the year in terms of peak loads. And then the two black lines above it, this dashed and the one with the dot, are two different versions of that load forecast with just addition added to it that's called the planning reserve margin. And the planning reserve margin is essentially the buffer that energy folks build into these sort of assessments to determine, you know, how many resources do we need. And that buffer is to take into account things like the load coming in higher than expected due to above average temperatures, as well as unexpected outages from resources on the grid. So we're trying to build in buffer in case any of those things happen, because we know that, you know, on average, some of them are going to happen on any given day. And so we have two different planning reserve margins, because this is a point of discussion that is currently underway in California of what should be the appropriate planning reserve margin as we are shifting our supply stack from being primarily natural gas to something that has a significant portion of renewables in the mix. So we're just kind of, this graph is looking at it a couple of different ways. Switching now to the bar chart that we have here, this is an hourly stack of the different resources. So you can see that the orange natural gas is making up about half of the fleet that is needed to meet the peak needs over the course of the day. Stacking on top of that, in gray, we have Nuke. That's California's one remaining nuclear facility, Diablo Canyon. The light blue is hydro. And then we go through the different renewables. Other renewables is things like biogas, biomass, geothermal. But the big ones are solar, which is that big yellow chunk that appears during the course of the day. And then you can see as the solar drops off in the early evening, we have this beige color, tan color that's coming on. And that is the battery storage, which is something that California has built out over the past several years. And DCE is, you know, working to bring battery storage online and into its own portfolio, because that's, you know, this is a big change from a few years ago in terms of this chart. You know, this battery storage is really just shown up over the past 2 or 3 years in terms of the capacity that we have here. And as you can see, that is completely making the difference between being able to meet our average peak versus being able to meet that peak with the buffer that we all want to have. So, you know, that's great for the state as a whole that we have built out that capacity. One last thing I want to draw your attention to is the red bar at the very top. That is imports from out of state into California. So as you can see, that is an important part of the stack If we're into those conditions where we need that buffer above the load forecast. And so that's why we are concerned about the potential for a west-wide heat event that could keep that import number quite low because the energy is needed to serve the load in other states. Moving to a focus on DCE's summer readiness, DCE is well prepared for the summer overall. The first thing that we look at is considering the financial impact that could occur to DCE in the case of a heat event. And the way we manage this risk is via procuring energy hedges, which is simply paying or agreeing to a contract where a supplier will provide energy at a fixed amount for a fixed time period, typically on a monthly basis, for a fixed price. And so in that way, you are fixing your cost of energy rather than relying on the CAISO day-ahead market and taking whatever price is available on that market, which can be quite volatile and, as you might expect, goes up as demand increases. So rather than floating on that and giving Claude a heart attack on his budget, we fix our price and we have more cost certainty. DCE is fully hedged for summer 2025. And we are meeting DCE's wholesale energy procurement risk management policy, which is a really great document outlining the different ways we manage risk via energy procurement. The requirements for the summer period is that DCE be hedged anywhere between 100% to 150% in Q3. And the rationale for that, you know, relatively wide band in that hedging requirement is to give DCE staff and TEA staff the latitude to hedge as appropriate based on sort of the conditions that we're seeing in the grid and the long-term weather forecasts, as well as DCE's own load numbers. So if, you know, we expect that there would be higher risk in the Q3, we might bump up that hedging amount to be at 125%, 130% to put on a little bit more certainty of risk reduction. Whereas if, you know, we were very, very well supplied, so if it had been an amazing water year, we might hedge a little bit less because there's additional resources in the stack to help bring about lower energy prices, all things being equal. But, you know, time being. Yep.
Just a little time check. I think this is your next to last slide or last slide.
Got two more.
Okay.
Sir, yes, I'll move a bit quicker. All right. So DC has fully procured all necessary RA to meet its compliance for Q3 as well. This is a capacity product that is required for all load serving entities. We have multiple years of summer operating history to help us guess or better forecast what the loads might be like under different weather conditions. And so that will help us support that analysis that's gone into the hedging. And DCE and TA staff have a protocol established to support staff communication and operations if we see the potential of a volatile pricing event coming in due to heat or potentially other conditions. This is a chart just describing what I already said, which is that DCE is over 100% hedged to meet the summer needs. You can see we're somewhere between 123% to 135% of your expected hedge period load over this time period. Two more slides. Your contracted generation for wind facilities, all operating as expected to supply energy into the CAISO to help meet the summer demand needs. And then my final slide, there's a lot of words on here, but I'll just very quickly go through it, is, you know, DCE staff asked me to speak to sort of overarching energy industry procurement concerns that we're thinking about as a group between the two of us and trying to manage risk around. The first one here is that the CPUC has a relatively new RA regime. It's in its first year of operation. It's going okay, but it's far from efficient, and in the market is a more expensive one typically. The second bullet is comment. We're having regulation change regarding how power content labels are reported, and particularly there's a shift to hourly reporting in terms of the carbon emissions levels. And so that's something that's going to be occurring over the next 2 to 3 years, and we're involved in the policy implementation discussions that are currently underway. The CPUC is in the very early stages of rolling out the Reliable and Clean Power Procurement Program, RCPPP, which is a framework that's meant to better organize the requirements to bring new resources online that the CPUC requires of load-serving entities. This is going to the MTR discussion that Lisa was having on the previous item. So this is sort of a new mandate or a more organized version of the mandate that we already have. There's organized market expansion underway throughout the West, with California expanding its borders outside of the state of California. That's via the CAISO's extended day-ahead market. And there's also a market coming from the East moving West. That's SQP Markets Plus. Changes in market design means the potential for risk. And then finally, this is something that I'm sure is very near and dear to DCE's staff's heart, since they're struggling with this on a daily basis. But new project development is very difficult and probably at all-time highs. And this is due to a number of different things stacking on top of each other. Federal policy changes, i.e. tariffs and the potential elimination of the IRA, just makes the ground that we all walk on very uncertain. There remain supply chain issues that started during the pandemic and have continued, shortage of component parts. There's significant interconnection delays throughout California, and there's permitting challenges as well to get these resources and the transmission necessary for them to be interconnected, built. And that is my last slide. I know there's a lot of information. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Any questions, Mel?
No questions.
No. Can we get a copy of this? Wasn't in the
No, it was as an information. We will work to share that out. Yes, we'll
okay.
Get that information.
Thank you. Thank you, Jacqueline. That was very informative and a lot of information, so I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Sorry that I couldn't be on camera.
That's okay. Okay, next is just some information items. And then we have public comments on non-agenda items. Second of two opportunities to address the board. Any person wishing to address the board on items not appearing on this agenda may do so at this time. Please limit comments to 2 minutes at the discretion of the chair. Additional public comment time and or opportunities during the meeting may be granted. Do we have any other public comment?
No, sir.
No? Okay. Announcements. We have the next DCE board meeting scheduled for July 21st, 2025. At 3 p.m. in the large conference room at Palm Springs City Hall. And we're going to hold that as a placeholder until we see if we actually need that or not. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other comments? Oh, okay. I now adjourn the meeting at 4:03 p.m. Thank you very much.